Hello everyone, welcome to the second season of the series of podcasts with IEEE Electron Devices Society Luminaries. As the world's largest professional organization, IEEE plays a significant role to enhance the quality of our life. Electron Devices Society, or EDS, encompasses activities involving electron devices, the main enabler for today's digital world. I'm Muhammad Mustafa Hussain, a professor of Elmore Family School of Electrical and Computer Engineering of Purdue University. I play a variety of roles in different capacities within the Electron Devices Society of IEEE. In this series of podcasts, we will be interviewing those EDS members who have made remarkable impacts in our society through their innovations and dedication. Our guest is someone whose seminal contributions in the field of semiconductor technology has advanced the general area of logic computing and memory technology. We are speaking with winner of IEEE Grove Award and Millennial Medal, Professor Sanjay Banerjee of the University of Texas at Austin. Sanjay Banerjee is the Cockrell Family Regents Chair Professor of Electrical and Computer Engineering and Director of Microelectronics Research Center at the University of Texas at Austin. He received his BTech from the Indian Institute of Technology, Kharagpur, and his master's and PhD from the University of Illinois at Urbana-Champaign in 1979, 1981, and 1983, respectively, all in electrical engineering. As a member of the Technical Staff Corporate Research, Development, and Engineering of Texas Instruments Incorporated from 1983 to 1987, he worked on polysilicon transistors and dynamic random access trench memory cells used by Texas Instruments in the world's first 4-megabit DRAM. He has been Assistant Professor 1987 to 90, Associate Professor 1990 to 93, and Professor from 1993 till today at the University of Texas at Austin. He has over 1,000 archival refereed publications and talks, 10 books and chapters, and 35 US patents, and has supervised over 80 PhD and 70 master's students. His students have received 15 Best Paper Awards at various conferences, and he has presented over 150 invited talks. He received the Engineering Foundation Advisory Council Halliburton Award in 1991, the Texas Atomic Energy Fellowship from 1990 to 1997, Collin Professorship 1997 to 2001, and the Hockott Research Award from UT Austin 2007. He has won the Semiconductor Industry Association and Semiconductor Research Corporation SIA/SRC University Researcher Award in 2017, IEEE Grove Award 2014, Distinguished Alumnus Award IIT 2005, Industrial R&D 100 Award in 2004, ECS Cullinan Award in 2003, IEEE Millennium Medal in 2000, NSF Presidential Young Investigator Award 1988, and several Best Paper Awards and SRC Inventor Recognition Awards. He was a distinguished lecturer for IEEE Electron Devices Society and the general chair of the IEEE Device Research Conference 2002. He is a fellow of IEEE, APS, AAS, and NAI. He is active in the areas of beyond CMOS nanoelectronic transistors based on 2D materials and spintronics, fabrication and modeling of advanced MOSFETs and solar cells. How are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
Thank you so much. So I'll start from the very beginning, and I know you were born in Sudan, so that's kind of exciting. So how was your childhood and school life?
I had a great childhood. So as you mentioned, my father used to work for the Indian Foreign Service. So he would be posted in different countries. I was born in Sudan. I spent about 5 years there. My brother was also born there. And then after a while, we grew up in Bhutan, which is a small country between India and China. So I had a great life seeing all these countries. Had a great childhood.
Great. I think like the Bhutan is the zero carbon emission country. It's a great place to actually grow up. So we'll fast forward. And how was your college life and graduate student life?
Yes. So I got my undergraduate degree at the Indian Institute of Technology at Kharagpur, which was closest to my hometown. Once again, had a wonderful experience out there. You know, the IITs are, as you know, among the best in India. Outstanding professors that I'm still in touch with. You know, they send their postdocs to work in my lab periodically. So, and I've gone back once in a while to teach short courses. Can't speak highly enough about IIT Kharagpur. Then after that, I came to the University of Illinois, Urbana-Champaign for my PhD. I had a choice of graduate school. I had a GRA offer from Professor Jim Mindel at Stanford, who unfortunately passed away last year, and Ben Streetman at Illinois. Is a tough choice. You know, they're both great choices, but I decided to work with Professor Streetman at Illinois because we had all studied from his famous textbook back in India. Had a great life at Illinois.
And, you know, I think like eventually you co-authored the same book, and we also read the same book. And if I'm not that wrong, anyone who has taken a course on solid state devices, they have actually read that book. So thank you for that.
Thank you for saying that. So yeah, so in 1999, Ben Streetman had become the dean. So when it came to the fifth edition, he asked me if I'd be willing to help out, and I jumped at the opportunity, and it's been very gratifying. You know, when I go to meetings, people may not have read any of my papers, but many of them have read the book and they asked me to autograph the thing. So it's a wonderful experience.
That's right. Okay. If I'm not that wrong, I think you started your professional career in Texas Instruments. Maybe if I'm not wrong. But anyway, what was your first, like, you know, the job and how you liked it? What was your experience?
Yes, you're right. I started at Texas Instruments in their corporate research labs in Dallas, Texas, and as part of the team that made the world's first 4 megabit DRAM. My manager was Pallob Chatterjee, who also graduated from IIT Kharagpur. In fact, he was from the same dorm. He was a few years senior to me, and he also studied under Ben Streetman at Illinois. So, you know, we have a lot of commonality in our careers. Had a wonderful time at TI also because, thanks to Pallob Chatterjee, he maintained a very academic environment, unlike many corporate groups where, you know, people would come and go at their own time, if you will, almost like graduate students. Strongly encouraged us to publish papers, so can't speak highly enough about TI. I left TI not because I was unhappy with TI. I always wanted to be a professor, so it was just a matter of, you know, getting some industrial background before I switched to academia.
I think, like, you know, that has been reflected throughout your academic career because that industrial experience, including myself, right, like, you know, that always helps us to understand the industry that we are trying to make contribution. If we don't know the state of the art, then it becomes really difficult, right? And it's kind of like, you know, the little bit illusory. But at that point, like, you know, all of your students or postdocs who have worked with you, they eventually, many of them have moved back to the industry and they have been contributing significantly throughout their career. So thanks for that. So a person like you, you know, that as in the beginning of this conversation, I was telling you, like, you know, that whenever you, wherever you go, you just own that place, like, you know, the way you talk, the depth you bring. So a person like you, what really excited you for Electron devices? You could have made something else your first choice.
That's a great question also. So when I graduated from high school, I did spend a lot of time trying to figure out what major I'd pick, because you know, it's going to have a big impact on your life, right? I honestly wanted to be a physicist, in fact, a theoretical physicist. But then, you know, when I looked at fields like, you know, quantum field theory and all, I realized that, you know, while it's absolutely fascinating, it doesn't have the kind of practical impact that engineering does. So I felt that, you know, electrical engineering and especially solid state electronics, while not exactly physics, it's sort of a backdoor to physics with real world life impact. So I thought that was a good compromise. And then, you know, there was a practical aspect also, because, you know, in terms of job opportunities, certainly there's much more opportunities in engineering than in physics. So that was the other aspect of it.
Well, you know, one of the key advantages of like, you know, the reading your research papers is that it not only talks about the device aspect, the, you know, the every device performance, but you seamlessly connect it to the what is the underlying physics. So that's kind of like, you know, the every single paper is like, you know, the stitching together, that itself becomes a huge sorry, it's a device physics book, if I'm not that wrong. Okay. So, you know, that this question I have asked, you know, the others, and there is a little bit of like debate on that. Eureka moment. Some suggest that they always had, like, you know, the small eureka moment. Some actually say that they didn't have. And some say that they had a eureka moment. So, okay, what is your perspective on that?
Yeah, I wish I could say that I had this, you know, magic moment where I discovered something truly earth-shattering. I still hope to do that, so I'm going to keep working. I haven't had that sort of a earth-shattering breakthrough. I wish I did. Having said that, you know, of course, we've had some few small successes along the way. So I think one of the things that we all like to do is to do research which has impact, as we are discussing, right? And having spent the first part of my career working on CMOS, I spent the second half of my career, roughly speaking, trying to displace CMOS, thinking of, you know, different kinds of beyond CMOS devices. And in that area, I've dabbled with various kinds of tunnel FETs, tunnel field effect transistors. In fact, at TI, we came up with one of the first practical tunnel FETs, which is band-to-band tunneling. But then at the University of Texas, many years later, as part of a major research program that I ran for about 10 years, we developed other kinds of tunnel FETs based on gated resonant tunneling FETs, both theoretically, and we are able to demonstrate them with room temperature operation. And, you know, these devices have the potential of consuming less energy than CMOS chips. It hasn't happened yet, so I call it a mini Eureka moment, not a major Eureka moment.
No, I think, like, you know, the sometimes, you know, all those water drops eventually leads us to ocean, right? Like, you know, so we never know when actually that moment comes. So you have worked on many things, like, you know, as you mentioned, that you started with CMOS, but then you did a lot of things which was meant to dismantle CMOS, and that might happen. So the question is that, like, you know, is there any specific work that, you know, that really makes you very happy and you always feel excited to share with?
So the different types of tunnel FETs that I worked on do make me happy. I mean, the tunnel FETs come in different forms, if you will. And we've had the opportunity of working on a couple of different ones. We've also proposed a theoretical idea of tunneling based on very exotic many-body physics that was developed with colleagues of mine in physics involving Bose-Einstein condensation. If that worked, I'd be really excited. Unfortunately, while the theory seems to be solid, experimentally, we have not seen evidence of that at room temperature. However, it's one of the things that we still keep trying to demonstrate. So if that were to happen, that would make me very, very happy. As I was mentioning, for about 10 years, I ran a program, one of three in the US, known as the Southwest Academy of Nanoelectronics, funded by the Semiconductor Research Corporation. And these centers were devoted towards trying to come up with a replacement for the MOSFET. So I had the honor of running one of those centers. And as part of that, we invented some of these device concepts. We also came up with some interesting concepts based on spintronics. A lot of them are still theoretical. We haven't really been able to experimentally demonstrate those. But, you know, it made me happy to at least, you know, think of some of those concepts.
Great. So this question is kind of like, you know, the it can be a little bit controversial, but let's poke it that way. Okay. If you were to start all over again, would you do what you would have done or chose a different field?
Good question. So as I was telling you, growing up, I did want to be a physicist, and in fact, a theoretical physicist, because, you know, when in high school, we all, you know, learn about Einstein and Schrodinger and Heisenberg, and, you know, we all have a fantasy that, you know, it'd be nice to be able to make impact like that, right? But then you realize that that's such a high bar that, you know, perhaps it's not for mere mortals, right? So that's when I sort of made a strategic decision to get into electron devices, because while it isn't, you know, quantum field theory, it is still, you know, condensed matter physics with a practical impact. And I think knowing what I know now about my capabilities, I think I made the right choice, because, you know, had I tried to do physics at the highest level, I'm not sure if I would have really made as much impact as I have been able to in engineering. Not that I've had a major impact, but at least I've had some successes. So I think in that sense, I compromised a little bit, but I think it was a good compromise where I chose a field which is sort of close to physics and matched my capability. So I would not change my career plans.
Great. I think, like, you know, the you being here with us in electron devices actually enriched all of our experience. So thank you for that. Okay, I am actually now moving to a very popular segment, especially with our young audience. And in this segment, we ask you some questions which actually give the audience an opportunity to know you at a more personal level, at a more humane level. And we call it the rapid fire round. We you know, appreciate if you can answer in a word or two, but you have all your time, like, you know, you can elaborate. Okay, so whenever you're ready, I'll go ahead.
Go ahead.
Okay. What are your hobbies?
I guess travel is one of the main ones.
Okay. Music or movie, which one do you enjoy more?
I enjoy both, frankly. In music, I like classical. In terms of movies, I'd say documentary movies.
Okay. What is the book you are reading now?
I'm reading a fascinating book called How We Got to Now by Steven Johnson, which talks about how everyday aspects of technology that we almost take for granted were developed. Things like glass or purified water or air conditioning. It's really, really fascinating. And in fact, there's also a documentary by the same gentleman that I've been watching. I mean, it gives you a very good insight as to how technology develops.
Okay. Sounds interesting. What is your favorite cuisine?
I like eating and I have many favorites, but I guess if I have to pick something, I'd say Cajun seafood. Okay. In a Louisiana seafood, yeah.
Okay. Any sports you enjoy?
I like tennis. I took tennis lessons at Illinois in graduate school and at Texas Instruments. I never really was good at it, but I enjoy it. And I enjoy watching tennis on TV.
Okay. What is your favorite travel spot?
There's not a spot per se, but there's a genre. And I'd say it would be national parks. I love nature. I like hiking in national parks.
Okay. Very good. Okay, so we are in the last part of our conversation. Here we will be looking into the future from your perspective. So my first question in that area is, what is your thought about electronics in the future?
I think we are at a nice inflection point in our field in the sense that Moore's law scaling, although it hasn't quite come to an end, you know, we are probably seeing the end of the roadmap. Of course, one has to be careful saying that because, you know, ever since I was in grad school, you'd hear about the end of Moore's law, you know, the 1 micron barrier, then the half micron barrier. So I don't think Moore's law is going to end quite right away, but it is going to end at some point. So I think all these more than Moore concepts and beyond CMOS concepts, I think are going to be very exciting for the young researchers entering the field.
Right. You know, one of the things about Moore's law, I feel like it's kind of a philosophy. It means that it's a quantification of a vision, right? Like, you know, that, okay, we do keep scaling, but there are certain goals that why we wanted to do the scaling. So whichever way it comes, it doesn't matter. Because, you know, when he talked about that, you know, I don't think that there was that many implications during just that meeting. That, okay, if we do physical scaling, how the physics is going to help us or how eventually the short channel characteristics are going to actually be an impediment, right? Like, you know, so those things came later, but the vision was there. Let's go for something with a number in hand.
Absolutely.
Right. Okay. Is there anything that strikes your mind which can be better today? It can be, your answer can be on anything.
I think society could better workers in the STEM fields, you know, science, engineering, math, more than in certain other fields such as finance and law. I think society has it, you know, upside down. It's kind of ironic. I work with lawyers once in a while as a patent expert witness, and it's ironic that the patent lawyers make so much more money than the engineers who write the patent. So I think it's really upside down.
Right. Okay. What application would you like to see in the future that does not exist today?
I think I'd like to point out maybe two, which, I mean, it is being worked on, but it's not quite at the tipping point yet. And these would be neuromorphic computing and quantum computing. So in quantum computing, of course, you know, there's been demonstrations, but with not enough qubits, not enough stability and low enough error rates to really make it practical. Because if, you know, these two were practical, then opens up, you know, a huge range of applications in AI, machine learning, which in turn could impact things like, you know, personalized medicine on one hand, or true autonomous driving, for example, in another aspect.
Right. Okay, what is your one advice for young generation?
Okay, so I think I'd encourage them strongly to complete college. You know, there are a few success stories of college dropouts, but those are few and far between. And I'd encourage them to study STEM-related subjects if possible. I'm showing my bias over here. If they don't like STEM, that's fine also, but I'd encourage them to not go bankrupt trying to go to a very expensive college and earn sort of an impractical degree, which will not pay off. And it's good to say, follow your passion, but it should also, you know, be somewhat practical. So, you know, given a choice, going bankrupt, studying something that's not very practical, I think young kids would be much better off maybe not going to college then, but learning a skilled trade, like being a, you know, electrician or a plumber or a welder. You know, there's no shame in not going to college and learning a skilled trade like that. I think they'll do much better in life if they follow that route.
Right, right. The dream while being grounded.
Yes, exactly.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay, so that concludes our conversation. But this is the question from me, that if there were anything that I didn't ask you, but you wanted to talk about.
No, I think you've covered many aspects of my life and my interests. So thank you for the opportunity. And to the young folks in the audience, if you're thinking of electron devices, I honestly can encourage you to get into the field, because it's very, very exciting. It's this interface between engineering and physics and chemistry with real life applications. So go for it.
Thank you for attending this IEEE EDS sponsored podcast. To listen to other EDS podcasts, as well as benefits and resources EDS offers, please go to the website eds.ieee.org. Thank you for listening.